have one more talk before the break. That is Gossipol Expression on Cottonseed and its Influence on Heliothine Attack, Part 1, Rationale and Project Implementation, with Jody Scheffler.
I'd like to thank you all for giving me the chance to come and talk this afternoon. And I'll say that I haven't been working in cotton for that long. I started in about 2000. Before that, I came from the grain crop area. Let's see, make sure I get this right. And as I moved over into cotton, the first thing they told me was, number one breeding objective, lint yield. Number two is lint yield. Number three and number four, lint yield, because that's what you get paid for. They also said, well, maybe you can do something with the lint quality, but we don't get paid for that, so just forget it. But I was still a little naive, and I said, well, what do you do with the seed? And very seriously, my boss told me that you can use it, the oil, to make Fritos corn chips. Unfortunately, I found since then that they don't even do that anymore. They use sunflower oil. But I was a little bit perplexed by this, because in cotton, for every 2.6 kilograms of fiber, there's 1.6 kilograms of cottonseed that's left over. And it just seemed like you should be able to do something. I did find out that some of the seed is fed to dairy cows, but I wanted then to know, why only cows? Why not chickens? Why not fish? Why not pigs? And I found out very quickly that cultivated cotton has a pretty good defense mechanism. They have glands that contain terpenoid aldehydes, and the seed glands in particular contain a toxic terpenoid aldehyde that's called gossypol. And then the plant glands, they do contain gossypol, but they also have a number of other types of these compounds that are generally called heliocides. And essentially what happens in nature is that these toxic compounds can protect the plants from pests, but because of their toxicity, it generally limits their usefulness as feed. So in general, when I started out, there really was no interest in cottonseed improvement. Then came the change in direction, and King Cotton went from number one to number three, basically in the matter of 2 years. And suddenly, my boss is telling me that we need to do something else. We can't just have increased yields. We need to do something with the seed. And that was fine with me, because it is true that if you could decrease the gossypol, the cotton seed is a very good source of high-quality protein. Now, there's a number of methods that you can use to decrease the gossypol. There's a mechanical method, but that's quite expensive. You can use genetic engineering, but then you have some of the regulatory and public acceptance issues. And there are several ways you can do it using conventional genetics. And the one that we decided to try first was to decrease the gossypol by decreasing the gossypol-containing glands. Now, in cotton, there's two genes that control the glanding. And there are recessive mutants out there. And essentially, if you have both of them in the recessive form, you have no glands. And the fortunate thing then, in one way, is that the no glands also means that there's no gossypol, and apparently it's not produced because it doesn't have a site for deposition. But as you can see here, it is a bit of a problem, because not only do you get rid of these small glands in the seed, but you also get rid of them everywhere else in the plant. So essentially, what you have in the end is you have no protection. So essentially, not only do the seeds not have the glands, but everywhere else there are. And this does make them vulnerable. We decided then to try an alternate strategy, which essentially is to develop what we call semi-glanded lines. And essentially, what we did was we just have one of the genes in the recessive form, and the other is still in the dominant or the normal form. And they are differentially expressed, so most of the effect of the GL2 is in the seed, and more of the effect of the GL3 is in the plant. That's not 100%, but that's the general trend. So again, just to see it a little bit visually, on the left-hand side, you can see this is full glanding of a normal plant that you might see. And then on your right, is the seed that goes with the semi-glanded lines. Now, there is some difference also in the plant parts. Generally, that the calyx, the stem, and the cotyledons are normal in the semi-glanded lines. The biggest difference you see in the leaves, and that's why I've shown here that on the left-hand side, you can see a fully glanded, and essentially it has glands in all the interveinal regions and so on. The one on the right-hand side, it tends to keep the glands along the margins and on the veins, but it doesn't have nearly as many in the interveinal regions. So that's where it loses the glands. Just to give you kind of an idea of what we were aiming for, the normal lines contain about 1 to 1.8% seed gossypol. And in order for it to be considered good for animal feed, you need to have something that's less than 0.5%. So we were able to develop some semi-glanded lines that did have less than 0.4% consistently with the seed gossypol. And I was quite happy, problem solved. Of course, I didn't do this all on my own. We had some very good collaborators, and in particular, Mike Dowd, who was our gossypol analysis expert, and a large number of technical people and students. So it was a large project, but I had some good help with it. Unfortunately, I still had some questions as a breeder that I wasn't really able to answer myself. And the two probably most important to me were, do glands on cotton plants really offer protection from plant pests? There was a lot of anecdotal evidence out there, and there were some papers from the 70s and 80s, but I hadn't really seen it tested really thoroughly in the field. The other thing I wanted to know was that it should be that the semi-glanded lines provide protection, but is that really true? Now, in where I work, our genetics fields, we really want to eliminate all kinds of stress. And so essentially, it's irrigated regularly, and we spray for pests almost every week. Unfortunately, that's not a really good way to tell how well the plant can really protect itself. And so I was quite fortunate that I work at the USDA facility in Stoneville, Mississippi, and the entomology group there has a farm, and they practice what I call minimum intervention, which means they essentially don't spray. And I was able then to team up with Carlos Blanco, which was very fortuitous, because then I had the chance to really test my genetic lines in the field. So in collaboration with Carlos, we started this last summer a field study to try and see if we could find some good techniques to really get at these answers. In that trial, we had 12 entries, 4 replications, and we had multiple screening dates for it. And I'd want to spend just a little bit of time on the materials that we tested. There were essentially two types of materials. These are essentially the extreme types, but they're in the same genetic background. So for instance, the STV with the big GL, the glanded form, then could be compared to the STV with the small GL, which is glandless. So these are the extreme types. Either they had totally normal glanding in the seed and plant, or they had absolutely no glands anywhere on the plant, not on the seed, not on the leaves. The other type of material we had were the semi-glanded lines, and all of them had in common that they had less than the 0.4% gossypol, but the plant glanding varied. So for instance, the first one, the GVS 5069, it had near normal plant glands. So essentially it was about 90% of a normal plant. Then we had one that was medium, and it was probably about 75% of normal. And then we had the low line, which is maybe 50. So they all had the same seed gossypol, but there was different glanding densities on the plant. Then we included as some checks, Delta Pine 432, which is a commercial variety, has normal glanding and pretty good yield. And then our other check, H1220, is a commercial variety, but we put it in there basically because it has a very high number of glands on the plant, and it also has a very high gossypol content. We were able to evaluate lines, and I have to say this is Carlos, he did this, evaluated the lines both in the lab reared and with natural populations. And we were able also to combine some field measurements and some laboratory tests. And just to give you an overview, Carlos is going to talk about this in quite a bit more detail, but for the field evaluations, essentially we were able to go out and with his lab-reared populations, we could put a single worm on a terminal, and then we could enclose it and keep it in the field for 7 days. And then after that time, we could go out and actually harvest these and then bring them back into the lab to do the evaluations. The other thing we did was a little bit in reverse. We would collect leaf from the fields, bring them into the lab, and in each one of these cups, essentially, we would have a leaf and an individual worm. And again, it was a 7-day test, and then they were evaluated. We also did two different field measurements this past year. One was that counted the naturally occurring heliotheme populations, and then to try and get an estimate of final yield, because again, yield is probably the number one thing. If you don't have something that yields, still the growers aren't going to be interested. So the conclusions for that, you have to check back for that answer in part two, so please come back after the coffee break. But before that, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them, if I can, or after the talk. Oh. If they don't have any questions, can I ask them a question?
You bet, ask them a question.
Good. I do have a question because in the 70s and 80s, they developed what they called glandless lines, and they became commercialized, and I think in Texas they actually released two in maybe mid-1980s, but they just basically were not popular whatsoever. Have any of you had any experience with how they performed in the field? I heard a lot of stories that the insects just ate them up, as they said, but I haven't found too much. So it really is true that you could essentially go out in the field and see which ones had the glands and which ones didn't?
Yeah, very obvious.
Okay. That gives me a little hope then. The glands really are doing something. That was my question.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Don't let it go walking off with that.